Greetings. I'm Bill Klatke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Keith Colston, who's Administrative Director of the Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs. And Keith is here today to give us an update on Indian settlement in Maryland, various things that Indians are doing to support our community, and how we can honor that. So, Keith, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back. I looked, it's been about a year since you were on, and I know you're doing a lot of stuff, and the Indian community has certainly gone through a lot of stuff in the last year. First of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, could you please tell us about the commission?
Sure. The Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs is a commission, state commission that was created through legislation, first in 1974, and then in 1976, it became a commission all to itself. The commission was put in place to assist the indigenous tribes with state recognition, which is a process of a state recognizing its tribes, bands, clans, and groups that other states have as well. And so with that, there were other issues and concerns that the tribal people had in reference to historical sites, preservation sites, and the overall well-being of its indigenous people. And so since that time period, it has gone on to be placed in various agencies, the Department of Housing and Community Development, DHS, and now we reside since 2008 with the Governor's Office of Community Initiatives, which is one of the coordinating offices for the governor.
What are your basic activities and services?
Well, one of the first things that we do is have six public meetings that, due to COVID-19 restrictions and the overall coronavirus situation, those meetings have been held virtually. Our next meeting, of course, will be streamed and where people can view what is taking place. Since our commissions are not open town hall meetings, the structure is a little different. And so with that, people are able to witness the conduction of business by the commissioners who are seated on the commission. Besides that, we have other annual activities that go on, such as our American Indian Heritage Month kickoff, which is in relationship to American Indian Heritage Month, which is held here in the state as one of the state commemorative months by law. We also have American Indian Heritage Day, which is the Friday after, I like to say Turkey Day, but to be, you know, specific and official, the day after Thanksgiving, which is also done by law as well. And so, you know, as we continue to, you know, progress here in the state as tribal communities and as indigenous peoples, we always look at some of the other factors that are going on that can be issues and, as we like to say, turned into success stories or achievements. And that being, you know, economically, health-wise, educational, with our archaeological work that goes on and that we are in tandem with to make sure things are being done appropriately with any remains of our people and also their artifacts, following federal guidelines as well as state guidelines in some of those areas. So we are very much involved throughout the state in a variety of areas because, as with any other Marylander, you know, we're affected by, you know, things that do take place on a day-to-day, month-to-month, year-to-year basis in the state, especially when it comes around to, you know, General Assembly time, you know, legislation that's being put in, things that are being approved and voted on and then turned into law that affects Comar or other things that, deal with tribal people that maybe a lot of people might not be aware of. But, again, that's our job. That's my job is to inform and to assist. So, yes, we are here to specifically to work with tribal communities. And at the same time, you know, our focus can also be to assist and inform the our non-native brothers and sisters and Marylanders about who we are and what we're about, not only of historical purposes, but what's going on in modern day.
Let me ask you, what's your background and responsibilities?
So my background is on the administrative side for the Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs. I serve as the administrative director, as we mentioned earlier. And what that entails is to direct the events and also the directives that come that are voted on by the commission my job is a dual situation, as I serve also at the pleasure of the governor. I serve at the pleasure of the commissioners. And so it is an opportunity for me to direct those events and activities in accordance with COMAR, in accordance with the policy procedures, with the bylaws, and with the legislation that created the Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs. So it's a wide range of duties that I do cover, along with working not in the sole, in the silo of the tribal communities, but also working with the state on various other agencies, like the Maryland Emergency Management Agency, which of course, you know, during this time that we're in, as a, that they are playing a major role. Also partnering and working with other state agencies like the Maryland Department of Health and on their mass vaccination advisory boards and working groups. So there's a wide range of things that that are upon my plate that I take joy in being a part of. You know, one of the things that people say is, you know, I have a job, and then the next question is, well, do you love your job? And I'm one of those individuals that maybe in a minority that I truly love my job and what it entails and being able to assist where possible.
That's wonderful. And you're a Tuscarora.
I am Tuscarora and also a Lumbee enrolled member from North Carolina. So I am not indigenous to the state. But one thing that is very true that I've had a long history of being involved in a multitude of activities since the age of 11 years old. And so, you know, Baltimore was always a magnet for me. There was always something that drew me here. So along my travels and decision making, I decided to make Baltimore my home back in 1994. And it's been a great time serving in a variety of ways, in a variety of areas. And then in 2007, joining the Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs as its administrative director. And it's in my tenure, we've achieved some incredible things in historical situations. The Maryland Indian status, better known as state recognition, being granted to the Piscataway Indian Nation and the Piscataway Kanoi Tribe. Yes, it was 2012 when that took place. And then in 2018, with the Accahonics receiving Maryland Indian status as they were, you know, one of the next petitioning groups. And so, you know, just that alone, you know, are historical facts. They are historical achievements, and not for the Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs, but more so and really for the tribal communities who were granted Maryland Indian status.
Absolutely. Let's talk about now American Indians and tribal people in Maryland in 2021. How has the COVID emergency impacted the community?
Well, it's really, you know, it's impacted the community just as it has with any other of our hard-to-reach areas. You know, and with that being said, us making sure that we're continuously reaching out to the tribal leadership through our commissioners, providing our commissioners with the up-to-date facts, the information that's being provided by our governor, Governor Hogan, and then making sure that we are able to get that out not only to the commissioners on the Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs, but to the rest of the ethnic commissions that are under the governor's office community initiatives. By utilizing them, getting the word out, and hopefully getting shots in arm, and increasing that situation. And, you know, now that we have the Vaccine Equity Operations Plan, that will assist our tribal communities, our American Indians, Native Alaskans, our indigenous peoples to get vaccinated, to have an opportunity to provide them with correct data, correct information to do so, and then hopefully relying on them to be a part of this herd immunity. Only going to improve the situation here in the state of Maryland for all Marylanders.
Right. I know that tribal people are especially vulnerable because they are generally of lower income.
We can definitely be vulnerable due to a variety of situations or things here in society that create some of those hardships. Some of those disparities that we do deal with, and that sometimes are overlooked or not mentioned, like others, and I completely understand that, and that's where we come in as commissioners, as administrative directors, and people who get involved to make sure that we are voicing ourselves, voicing our concerns, as well as our achievement. And when it comes to COVID-19 in the state, you know, our population of 65 and older are affected like others. You know, when we're looking at a annual income below $49,000, definitely there can be some constraints and barriers that exist, more so for those than those who have a much larger annual income. And so, you know, we're looking at the unemployment rate, and that's something that truly can affect minority communities in hard-to-reach areas, those individuals who may not have access to a vehicle, and then, you know, the housing, you know, situations that may come into play as well, you know, the single parents. These are all issues that, you know, that we're working on and targeting through, you know, the governor's plan, and that can work in a very effective manner as we continue to get more and more people involved and aware of this targeted outreach and the vaccine equity operations plan that's in effect.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, Keith, how many tribal people are there living in Maryland now?
So when we look at the 2010 census, you know, we were looking at about 83 to 85,000, around 85,000 that identified as Native and other. And then when we look at, you know, more deeper to the numbers, you know, we have about, you know, anywhere from, I would say 23,000, about 24,000 that identify as Native only. And that's a makeup of a variety of tribes, just not indigenous tribes in the state. I would look for, you know, the data that's going to be coming out here for the 2020 census that we, you know, just got wrapped up on, that we were heavily involved in along with, you know, other ethnicities in the state. And I can tell you that those numbers will definitely be larger in ratio and population. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is that with those numbers is how we can determine many other factors that are going on with tribal people, you know, in those areas that I mentioned earlier, education, employment, economic development, you know, we're talking about the health area and the health aspect of tribal communities. And the most important thing that we can do, Bill, is that, you know, not only collect data, but collect data that is correct, meaning that, you know, it's not about just pulling a number. It's about making sure that, we have a number that can be backed by the data that supports the numbers that are provided.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's critical to actually addressing the real need.
That is. And what we want to do is reach out to a variety of entities in the state, you know, to help us achieve that goal, you know, working with the Maryland Department of Planning, which we've done in the past, and we've had a great working relationship. And what we need to do is to, you know, make that relationship even more efficient to get that data out. We're working with the Maryland State Archives with a Native American working group that is there to assist. And some of the things that our tribal communities need to look back at to help us move forward to where we're at today, you know, dealing with tribal treaties that occurred that people might not be aware of. Some of the agreements that were made then that are still, as we say, on the books and that need to be looked at and taken into account. So people can understand where tribal people are at today is because of many of the actions that have taken place historically.
Right.
And this is when we start talking about health disparities. There are a variety of disparities that take place, and it happens over a long period of time. And so, you know, the great thing is that we have state agencies who truly want to assist and help tribal communities to where they need to be.
We're about out of time. Keith, could you give us that contact information one more time, please, for the Commission on Indian Affairs?
Sure. You can reach me at 410-675-4662. And then directly, more so, in fact, I would have people reach me at 443-742-7777 because of the working virtually, once again, due to COVID-19 and the coronavirus here in the state. And you can reach us also through the Governor's Office of Community Initiatives website. We're looking to work and partner with as many people as possible. So mm-hmm. I look forward to, you know, whatever discussions could occur after everyone hears this this interview.
Well, I'm sure folks will get in contact with you because it is something that there is a great need and there is a great, if you will, fascination with, and folks should be aware of their history. Unfortunately, though, that's all the time we have for Living in Baltimore. I want to thank our guest, Keith Colston, who's Administrative Director of the Maryland Commission on Indian Affairs, for being our guest today. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you, Bill.
Keep up your good work for all of us. Remember, if you are a victim of discrimination, say in finding an apartment, getting a mortgage, being unfairly passed over for a job at work, or being told we don't rent to you people, don't just take it. File a complaint. Call the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights at 410-767-8600 or 1-800-637-6247 or go to mccr.maryland.gov. For Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.